conservative VIPs came in October of 2020, when the group provided security at a march in Washington, led by the Walk Away Foundation, an organization that seeks to persuade Democratic voters to leave the party. Mr. Lewis said in a YouTube video posted that December. The foundation's leader, Brandon Straka, a former hairstylist in New York, was among those arrested in the Capitol attack. Court papers suggest that he recently began to cooperate with the government. At that event and others, First Amendment Praetorian provided more than bodyguards, Robert Patrick Lewis said. Its protective detail also included low-vis operators dressed in plain clothes, moving in the crowd. We had eyes and ears everywhere, he added. As the presidential election drew closer, Robert Patrick Lewis branched out beyond personal protection and started giving interviews, casting himself as a security expert to right-wing news outlets, including those connected to the QAnon conspiracy theory. Among his claims, which are so far unsubstantiated, was that professional analysts working for First Amendment Praetorian had infiltrated encrypted forums visited by members of the loose left-wing collective known as Antifa and had discovered plans for a nationwide attack. Our intelligence shows that no matter who wins the election, they're planning a massive Antifa-Tet offensive bent on destroying the global order, he told Fox News Channel just 2 days before the November 2020 election. Once the votes were cast, Mr. Lewis turned his attention back towards guarding pro-Trump luminaries at rallies in Washington, where throngs of people showed up in support of the lie that the election had been rigged. One of his clients was Ali Alexander, a prominent Stop the Steal organizer who was a featured speaker at the so-called Million MAGA March on 14th of November 2020. Mr. Alexander has since given testimony to the House Select Committee. Around the same time, First Amendment Praetorian became involved in another project connected to challenging the election. Members of the group, as Robert Patrick Lewis put it in his video in December, began to scour the internet for OSINT, or open source intelligence, about allegations of election fraud. Whatever evidence they found, he said, they sent to Sidney Powell, a Dallas-based lawyer who filed 4 federal lawsuits in late 2020 contesting the results of the presidential vote. The lawsuits, which ultimately failed and resulted in a federal judge imposing sanctions on Sidney Powell, described without any credible evidence a plot by a cabal of international powers to hack U.S. voting machines and flip the count away from Donald Trump. By mid-December 2020, First Amendment Praetorian took a job protecting one of Sidney Powell's former clients, Michael Flynn, at a second large pro-Trump rally in Washington. The rally was put together, public permits say, by Cindy Chafian, an organizer for the pro-Trump group Women of America First, which arranged for caravans of the president's supporters to rally across the country after the election. Cindy Chafian has also been subpoenaed by the House Select Committee. This rally, on 12th of December 2020, helped to solidify First Amendment Praetorian's relationship with Michael Flynn and Cindy Chafian. It also brought the group into contact with the Oath Keepers, who joined their protective detail, according to a television interview that the militia's leader, Stuart Rhodes, gave that day. In the interview, Stuart Rhodes described how the two groups worked together at the rally. He then urged Donald Trump to wage war against traitors at home by imposing martial law. That was the same message that Sidney Powell, Michael Flynn, and others in their orbit were advising at the time. Robert Patrick Lewis says he played his own small part in the effort to persuade Donald Trump to declare martial law. On 18th of December, he said on a podcast last year, he drove Sidney Powell and Michael Flynn to the White House to meet with Donald Trump. It is not clear whether Mr. Lewis himself attended that meeting, where Sidney Powell and Michael Flynn urged the president to declare a national emergency and demand a recount of key swing states on live television. according to the business executive Patrick Byrne, who was also there. It was not long after the White House meeting that Robert Patrick Lewis, like others, turned his attention towards 6th of January, which was widely seen as the final opportunity for Donald Trump and his allies to stop the certification of Joe Biden's presidential win. On 5th of January, Mr. Lewis gave a speech at the event organized by Cindy Shafian at Freedom Plaza in Washington, telling the crowd that they should not be intimidated by the enemy at the gates. Another organizer of the events that day, Dustin Stockton, said that he saw Mr. Lewis and Cindy Shafian with other members of First Amendment Praetorian in a room at the Willard Hotel, not far from the war room where some of Donald Trump's top allies had gathered. On that day of the Capitol attack, at least one of Mr. Lewis's lieutenants, Jeffrey Flohr, a former Michigan police officer, was outside the building walking the grounds and talking on his cell phone just before the riot erupted, according to public videos. Cindy Shafian and her husband Scott Shafian were also in the mob outside of the Capitol building. Another member of the First Amendment Praetorian posted on Twitter that afternoon claiming he was in the overwatch position in Arlington County, Virginia, where prosecutors say the Oath Keepers had placed at a hotel an armed quick reaction force that was prepared to move quickly into Washington if needed. As for Robert Patrick Lewis, he told the Daily Beast last year that he was at the Willard Hotel again on 6th of January, away from the chaos at the Capitol. "Today is the day the true battles begin," he wrote on Twitter, just as the Capitol was breached.
The wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
Late Iranian commander Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani was seen as a hero who stood up for the suppressed Muslims and Christians and people of other religions in Syria and Iraq, as well as other parts of West Asia. According to many Syrians and Iraqis, he was fearless, courageous, unselfish, and always present on the battlefield. General Soleimani was the spearhead of the fight against the U.S.-sponsored Daesh Takfiri terrorist group in West Asia. He was the strategic master of many battles against Takfiri terrorists in Syria. He played an important role in the liberation of the Christian-dominated regions from the grip of Takfiri terrorists in the country. Also, he had a great reputation in Iraq, where Daesh conquered large parts of the country. He managed to unite Sunni Kurds and Shia fighters in the battles against Takfiri terrorists. Therefore, for many Iraqis, he was a hero, like in Syria. General Soleimani was able to mark very important plans in line with providing regional security by preventing Daesh terrorists from overthrowing governments in Syria, Iraq, Lebanon, and other countries.
Daesh was actually an American and Zionist creation in order to destroy a number of Muslim countries as well as give a horrible image to Islam, because Daesh terrorists indulged in horrific crimes against innocent people. And so that project that the imperialists and the Zionists had launched, we saw how they erupted in Iraq in July of 2014, and by 2017 they were wiped out through the efforts of Martyr General Qasem Soleimani,
General Soleimani was assassinated in a U.S. drone strike on January 3, 2020, while on a trip to the Iraqi capital Baghdad. This raises the question, why should Washington kill the man who fought the terrorists in West Asia most successfully? General Soleimani was a powerful, strategic mastermind who revealed the ugly face of Western interference in both Syria and Iraq. His assassination exposed the U.S.'s support for terrorist groups and Washington's lies of countering terrorism. Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani was loved by people of the region as a defender of the oppressed, protecting Christians, Muslims, and those of other religions. Western-sponsored terrorist groups such as Daesh and Jabhat al-Nusra sought to promote an image of Islam that was false. These groups were created by the Israeli regime and America with the financial support of Saudi Arabia. And General Soleimani was the one who confronted these deviant groups in Iraq and Syria. He managed to help the oppressed. He tried to save women, men, and children in Iraq and Syria from the crimes of Takfiri terrorists, no matter what faith they were from. He united Muslims and Christians and people of other religions in the fight against terrorists and once and for all defeated them.
Well, Daesh's tactics included killing innocent people, kidnapping women and raping them, killing children, and so on. These are things that have absolutely nothing to do with Islam. In fact, they are the very antithesis of the values of Islam that places a great premium on saving and protecting human life. So while Daesh and their backers were busy in killing innocent people, and with the deliberate policy, of course, of the imperialists and the Zionists to create a very violent and negative image of Islam, but the people, obviously, the targeted people, were horrified by their actions, whether it was in Iraq or in Syria.
Millions of people in Iran, Iraq, Syria, and the rest of the world attended the funeral of General Soleimani. This shows that he is beloved by the West Asian nations and all the free people of the world. Iran marked the second anniversary of the U.S. assassination of the legendary anti-terror commander Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani. In a meeting with General Soleimani's family in Tehran, leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, said, "General Soleimani has turned into a role model and a hero for the younger generation." Meanwhile, tens of thousands have taken part in ceremonies to pay tribute to the highly charismatic commander.
"Soleimani was commander who did not allow the terrorists to approach our borders. He defeated Daesh in Iraq and Syria, so the entire region always owes him a big thank."
American politicians thought that by killing General Soleimani, they would be able to let the terrorists win, but we are all going to preserve his legacy.
Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei said the enemies were under the delusion that with the martyrdom of General Soleimani, quote, they would be done with their job. However, the U.S. fled Afghanistan as a result of the sacrifices made by Soleimani.
"Afghan youth learned many lessons from him. Today, all the freedom-seeking people in the world regard him as a role model.
All Afghan people should follow his path, and he is in our hearts. We all look at him as someone who defeated arrogant powers."
Ayatollah Khamenei also said Washington is inevitably pulling out of Iraq and only has an advisory role there, without any military presence. Iran's leader warned Iraqi officials to be vigilant about the issue. On Saturday, Iraqis held rallies on the streets of the capital, Baghdad, to honor top Iranian General Qasem Soleimani and senior Iraqi commander Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, both assassinated by the U.S. 2 years ago. Demonstrators called for the withdrawal of American forces from the country. Ayatollah Khamenei added the resistance front in Yemen is making gains, while the enemy has been brought to its knees in Syria. The leader, on Saturday, touched on the participation of tens of millions of people in Iraq, Iran and other countries in the funeral and the processions held for General Soleimani after his assassination. General Soleimani is hailed as a hero of the fight against terrorism by people across the globe. The Islamic movement in Nigeria described General Soleimani as a hero of coordination between Christian and Muslim religions, leading victory over Daesh in Iraq and Syria. Also, Bolivia ex-president Evo Morales described General Soleimani as a hero in the fight against imperialism. The top Iranian anti-terror commander's assassination also exposed the U.S.'s support for terrorist groups and Washington's lies of countering terrorism. Iran has called on the United Nations to adopt a resolution condemning those behind the assassination of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani. The Iranian president's office has made the call in a letter to the president of the UN General Assembly, saying the impunity granted to the perpetrators of the drone strike poses a threat to international peace and security. It stresses that attacks on government and diplomatic officials are crimes against humanity and violate the UN Charter and international law on human rights. It warns that inaction on state terrorism can lead to devastating consequences for the international community.
That type of extra-legal activity really was emphasized and came forward in a way that it had never seen before, basically to assassinate people in the middle of essentially a diplomatic mission in another country. And that's simply not possible to continue like that. And the response, of course, in Iraq was fury and the demand that the United States get out. So clearly, it's the wrong way to go from a whole variety of reasons, but especially a moral reason.
Iran's top general, Qasem Soleimani, was assassinated along with his companions, including Iraqi commander Abu Mahdi al-Mohandes, in a U.S. terrorist drone strike near the Baghdad International Airport on January 3, 2020. But the U.S. was not alone in committing this heinous crime. Israel provided Washington with the key intelligence support, including tracking General Soleimani's cell phone. General Qasem Soleimani and Abu Mahdi al-Mohandes were two iconic figures in the fight against the Daesh terrorist group that emerged amid the mayhem resulting from the U.S. invasion of Iraq in 2003. Both commanders were admired by Muslim nations for eliminating the U.S.-sponsored Daesh Takfiri terrorist group in the region, particularly in Iraq and Syria. Days after the brazen act, the Islamic Revolution Guard Corps launched a volley of missiles at two major military bases housing American forces in Iraq. Iran denounced the assassination as a state terrorism and vowed to end the American presence in the region as the ultimate act of revenge. The U.S. assassination drew a wave of condemnation from officials and movements through the world and triggered huge public protests across the region.
The grief-stricken woman is the mother of the 14-year-old girl who died in her arms after being shot by an LAPD officer.
I have a warning to come in from the east side. He's on the second floor.
On December 23rd, police are dispatched to a department store after receiving reports about a violent man beating up customers there with a heavy bike lock. One officer, wielding a rifle, fires shots at the assailant. But one of the bullets pierces through the dressing room's wall and hits the teenager, who's hiding there with her mother, in the chest. Valentina's body immediately goes limp. She is dead.
Right? I mean, shooting into a Burlington factory, basically a store, a clothing store, is insanity. Is insanity to do so with people while people are shopping there, and yet you have officers who are doing that because they aren't thinking rationally anymore. Rational thought has gone out of the minds of many of these individuals, and it has become solely almost like a cult, like a state-sanctioned army, if you will, who is locked in arms and feels like they are being attacked from every side, and so in order to defend themselves from these attacks, they are just getting more and more violent and aggressive.
She was the fifth person killed by the LAPD forces in a 9-day period. The sixth victim survived their injuries. None of them were armed with any firearms. The incident during Christmas time sparked outrage and criticism at one of the United States' largest police departments. The Los Angeles Police Department killed more than double the number of civilians in 2021 than it did in 2020. Activists believe the rise in the number of fatalities is because the officers rarely face consequences for their actions, if at all. The death of African-American George Floyd at the hands of a white Minneapolis officer in May 2020 sent shockwaves across the United States and prompted protests against police racism and brutality. Against that backdrop, however, the number of police killings remains high. In 2021, American police killed over 1,100 people. In the 2021 calendar, there were only 12 dates on which the police didn't kill anyone. 27% of the victims over the past year have been African American. This is while the minority group constitutes only 13% of the U.S. population.
Really, what the police are trying to show here through these killings, and through the, it's not just through the killings, but through the market increase in the number of killings from last year to this year, is that they are the ones with the power in these cities, that they are the ones with the right or the privileges to exercise their violence. They are the ones who can shoot first and then ask questions later. They're allowed to do that.
In the meantime, while more murder and manslaughter charges have been made against police officers, criminal charges and convictions have remained exceptionally rare. 98.3% of killings by police between 2013 and 2020 have not resulted in officers being charged with a crime.
So, on the one hand, even though you're seeing some of the officers get away with the violent acts that they're committing, and other ones get arrested and get sent to prison for their crimes that they committed. Either way, the other officers who are watching all this happen, who are watching the attacks from the mainstream media, or watching the attacks from the population, from the civilians, and who are watching that now their fellow brethren be locked up for crimes that they've either witnessed or committed themselves, this is causing a sort of defensive defensiveness on the part of police here in the United States, where they're uniting over their brotherhood in terms of being police officers before even uniting over nationality, before even what it means to be an American, before what it even means to be a human being.
The families who've lost a member to police violence in the U.S. are demanding justice and accountability. Even if justice is served, they will have to live with the sobering thought that their loved ones won't ever come back.
China has harshly warned Chinese Taipei against making moves towards independence. Beijing says it will take drastic measures if the self-governed island crosses red lines. Chinese officials say provocation by separatist forces in Taiwan and, quote, external intervention could intensify in coming months. Foreign ministry officials say China is willing to try its utmost to seek peaceful reunification with Taipei, but would act if any red lines on independence were crossed.
Well, crossing the red lines for China would mean that Taiwan would declare independence. And it would be, in reality, would be against Taiwan's constitution. In order to change Taiwan's constitution, it would need us all to pass a referendum, which would need to have an approval of 75% of the legislative chamber. So at this stage, Taiwan's declaring independence is very unlikely.
Earlier in December, China's foreign minister stressed the need for Taipei to be reunited with Beijing, saying the self-ruled island is not a chess piece to be used by others.
Wang Yi said the root cause of the new round of tensions lies with the island's authority that have attempted to solicit U.S. support for Taiwan independence. He also accused the United States and certain countries of deliberately using Taipei to contain Beijing. The top Chinese diplomat described Taipei's ambitions for independence as perverse actions and said the moves designed to change the status quo undermine peace and stability in the Taiwan Strait and violate the consensus of the international community as well as the basic norms governing international relations. China has sovereignty over Chinese Taipei, and under the One China policy, almost all the world countries recognize that sovereignty. The US too recognizes Chinese sovereignty over the island, but has long courted Taipei in defiance of Beijing.
If you look at the largest companies, Taiwanese companies, such as Foxconn and Pegatron, they have most of their workforce in the mainland. So it would be just an economical suicide for Taiwanese just to declare independence. And it's very unlikely. Independence is a planted idea by the US against China and Taiwan's interests.
The United States, which backs Taipei's secessionist president, continues to sell weapons to the island in violation of its own stated policy. After the Communist Party seized power in mainland China in 1949, the US refused to recognize it as a rightful government in China. Instead, the US had an embassy in Taipei. In the 1970s, Washington and Beijing decided to establish formal ties in a bid to create a counterbalance to the Soviet Union. And at the start of 1979, the US gave formal diplomatic recognition to the communist-run People's Republic of China and cut ties with Taipei. In doing so, Washington recognized the PRC as the sole legal government of China. It also acknowledged Beijing's position that there is only one China and that Taipei is part of it. After the US cut off formal relations with Taipei, Congress passed the Taiwan Relations Act. It has underpinned US ties towards the island ever since.
Well, the US policy regarding Taiwan is what they call a strategic ambiguity. It is officially respecting the One China policy, but in action, the US has clearly been undermining the One China policy by meddling into Taiwanese politics. The US has groomed President Tsai Ing-wen since 2004.
In recent years, the US has made China a top priority. The measure, known as the Pivot to Asia policy, was unveiled during Obama's administration and made East Asia and China in particular a top priority of the US foreign policy. The Trump administration dramatically upped the ante against China. Back in October, US President Joe Biden said the United States would come to Taipei's aid if it were to come under attack from China, claiming it had a commitment to defend the self-ruled island.
So, besides that, the US has been investing massively into Taiwanese politics and media through NED, the National Endowment for Democracy, which is the rebranded name for the CIA.
China blasted the statement, accusing Washington of meddling in Chinese internal affairs. The US and China are also at loggerheads over a number of issues, including trade and the South China Sea.
This is the Heart of Life pounding. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
With the firm determination shown by the lovers of freedom and justice, the day may soon dawn when the killers of Soleimani and al-Mohandes receive their due punishment, however tight the security ring around them. says Kahan International staff writer, in an article published under the heading, Justice Demands Elimination of Soleimani's Killers. Stay tuned for more. Justice loses its very concept if sadistic killers who shamelessly brag about the terrorism they have committed, especially in shedding the blood of those striving for peace, progress, humanitarian values and freedom from hegemonic yoke, are left unpunished. For whatever reason, including undue apprehension of the power, position and protection the criminals might enjoy. In other words, in order to deter repetition of rampant acts of terrorism, the murderers, along with their accomplices, ought to be brought to justice and meted out the punishment they deserve as a warning to all would-be criminals of the consequences of their crimes against humanity. This was the gist of the speeches that echoed on January 3rd from the snow-covered heights of Himalayas in Kashmir to the sun-scorched coast of Red Sea and all the way to the Mediterranean, as scholars, journalists, media personnel, politicians, freedom fighters, and religious leaders joined the masses in commemorating the second anniversary of the martyrdom of two of the topmost icons of the struggle against international terrorism. They did not mince words when they demanded that the bloodthirsty rogue Donald Trump, who, as the then president of the U.S. regime, had connived with his Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, and the Zionist regime's notorious crime minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, to assassinate Iran's General Qasem Soleimani and Iraq's Abu Mahdi al-Mohandes, be convicted by the UN and given capital punishment. Iranian President Dr. Seyed Ebrahim Raisi, in his address to a huge gathering at Tehran's sprawling Imam Khomeini Musalla, rightly remarked that if Trump, the prime aggressor, murderer, and criminal in the heinous crime of assassination of General Soleimani, is not put in the criminal dock, along with Pompeo, for trial in a fair mechanism of justice and not given the maximum punishment, the Islamic Ummah will undoubtedly wreak vengeance. At the same time, in New York, Iran's permanent ambassador to the UN, Majid Takht-Ravanchi, reminding the world body of its investigative report in 2020 that castigated as unlawful the U.S. assassination of Soleimani al-Mohandes, their eight colleagues in the terrorist attack on Baghdad International Airport, said, given the dire implications of this terrorist act on international peace and security, the Security Council must live up to its charter-based responsibilities and hold the United States and the Israeli regime to account for planning, supporting, and committing the terrorist act. Will the UN live up to its responsibilities and take necessary action against Trump and his criminal clique? The answer is in the negative, because of the influence of the U.S. wills over the UN. But this will not be an impediment for those activists for justice determined to penetrate the security ring around the terrorists to mete out revolutionary justice to them. This was hinted by the bereaved daughters of the two prominent martyrs, whose tears have not run dry and are resolved that the prime perpetrators of terrorism should be eliminated along with their accomplices. Zainab Soleimani, during her vigil at Baghdad Airport on Sunday night, January 2nd, the eve of the martyrdom anniversary of the two topmost anti-terror commanders, reminded the Iraqi people of the love of her father, for them from the depth of his heart and how he had saved them from the U.S. and the Takfiri terrorists. She said the Iranian and Iraqi people should work hand in hand for avenging the innocent blood of the martyrs. Manar al-Muhandis, in her presence at the grave of her father in the vast Wadi al-Salam cemetery in Najaf, amidst a huge gathering, said Abu Mahdi devoted his life to the liberation of the Iraqi people. And tonight, we, the Iraqi and Iranian people, vow to move closer, hand in hand, and step by step, to the horizon of exacting harsh revenge on enemies whose hands are stained with their blood. She added, we will exact vengeance on the rulers of Saudi Arabia as well, who think that they can revive the rule of the oppressive Umayyad regime with their money. We will indeed take revenge for every drop of blood that was shed unjustly in Iraq, Syria, and Yemen. With such a firm determination shown by the lovers of freedom and justice, the day may soon dawn when the killers of Soleimani and al-Muhandis receive their due punishment, however tight the security ring around them.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Hame ba wujood qudde saratani Israel mukhalifin.
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel.
وجه مشترك همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is the part of a speech delivered on December 12, 2021 by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in meeting with a number of nurses and the families of those martyred while working in the health profession.
Another value of nursing lies in the fact that nursing is a source of surety. Whose surety? First, that of the patient. When a nurse is watching over a patient, he feels assured. Secondly, his family feels assured, since there is a nurse in the hospital who is with their patient. If there were no nurses, they would feel anxious and worried. And thirdly, everyone feels assured, everyone's conscience is bothered, and people are worried about the pain and suffering of the people who are suffering. If we see there is no one attending to the need of a patient who is in pain and who is hungry and thirsty, our consciousness will naturally be bothered. But because we know there is a nurse there, we feel assured. So nurses are a source of surety for the patient, for the family members, and for everyone else, since nurses soothe our troubled consciousness. Therefore, on this basis, not only the patients indebted to the nurses community, but you and I are also indebted to them and other people who are not related to the patient in any way, and are also indebted to them because nurses give everyone a feeling of assurance.
دنیای اسلام یک
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
one reason why nursing in Islamic Iran is more valuable is that the arrogant powers in the world takes delight in the suffering of the Iranian nation. You don't believe this? The enemies rejoice at the suffering of the Iranian nation. What is the reason for saying this? The reason is the chemical bombing during the sacred defense. Thousands of our youth were afflicted with acute, painful, and incurable diseases as a result of the chemical bombings. Sometimes their family members and their children were affected as well. Of course, the chemical bombings were carried out at Saddam's command, but who gave him the bombs? Who gave him the chemical substances? Who gave him the go-ahead, and who watched this happen with satisfaction? Just the mere possibility that a country may possess a chemical weapon causes a huge uproar in the world today. But he used to drop chemical bombs in front of everyone's eyes.
Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope.
This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Puraza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
Hezbollah Secretary General Said Hassan Nasrallah lashed out at the United States as the mother of corruption and terrorism in the region and stressed that the expulsion of U.S. forces from the region will be the final revenge for the U.S. assassination of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani and Iraqi Popular Mobilization Unit's commander Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis in Baghdad in 2020.
We have declared earlier that the best revenge is the full withdrawal of U.S. troops from the region. And over the past 2 years, as the leader Imam Sayyid Ali Khamenei said, the U.S. has been forced to leave Afghanistan with humiliation. This has led the U.S. allies to rethink their alliance with Washington.
In an address to a ceremony in Beirut remembering the martyrs Qasem Soleimani and Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis and their companions, Sayyid Nasrallah also accused the U.S. of being behind all Israeli and Saudi crimes in the region for decades.
The lesson which I would like to highlight today is that everyone acting for the sake of God emerges victorious in all battles and wins the hearts and minds of all people across the Arab and Muslim worlds. They show us that the U.S. serves as a real enemy and source of corruption, occupation, and terrorism in our region.
Allies believe that the project of the resistance continues to face the criminality of the U.S. in Lebanon and the region.
Al-Liwa al-Shahid Qasem Soleimani.
Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani belonged to the school of thought of a struggle against the occupiers of our land and those who destroyed our homes and killed our people and led one war after the other with their support for the Zionists. He sacrificed his life and stood against terrorism in Iraq, Yemen, Syria, and Lebanon and Palestine. He taught us that Lebanon is strong enough and can remove itself from the U.S. hegemony.
The leader of the resistance stressed that the assassination of martyr Soleimani, Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, has triggered a new phase at the regional level.
The assassination of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani and PMU Commander Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis is seen as an incident larger than the region itself, and for many analysts has brought to light a long-term confrontation for Lebanon's Hezbollah facing U.S. influence in Lebanon and the region. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani is highly respected among Afghan people because of his leadership role in resisting invasion and Takfiri groups in the region. Afghans consider him as a hero who inspired them to find freedom and defeat the invaders. To commemorate Lieutenant General Soleimani's sacrifices and bravery, Afghan leaders, clerics, and experts gathered at Iranian embassy in Kabul, highlighting his role in unifying Muslims and forming an anti-terror resistance in the region, especially Afghanistan.
Martyr Soleimani was a righteous servant of God. He was committed to Islam's holy values and ideals, so he devoted his life to serve Muslims and the oppressed and fight devils and Takfiri groups. He fought the U.S. hegemony in the region and didn't let it interfere in Islamic countries' affairs and create terror and war in the region.
Shahid Qasem Soleimani.
Martyr Soleimani managed to unify Muslims around the globe. He always used to show up wherever he was needed. For Afghanistan, he was a friend. He met resistance forces and Afghan top leaders to motivate and empower them to defend their soil against terrorists and invaders. Therefore, we owe the victory over the U.S. to the anti-terror General Soleimani.
Some Afghan teenagers, considering themselves as the followers of Lieutenant General Soleimani's school of thought, have held a Sunday Wushom match on the occasion of the second anniversary of the martyrdom of their fearless role model.
Our match is held here in support of Commander Soleimani. We, the young generation of Afghanistan, are followers of his school of thought. We love the commander's attitude and adopt him as our role model in bravery, faith, and modesty. That is why most matches are named after him.
Lieutenant General Soleimani not only played a major role in defeating Daesh terrorist group in Syria and Iraq, but also had a direct relation with Afghan resistance forces to help them defeat terrorist groups and put an end to invasion on their soil. Afghans marked the second anniversary of the U.S. assassination of the anti-terror commander Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani as they are still suffering from time-to-time Daesh attacks. For Afghans, Martyr Soleimani is a hero and a role model for fighting against terrorism. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
The second anniversary of the assassination of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani was marked with a lecture which detailed the life and good works of the former leader of the Quds Force of Iran's Revolutionary Guards Corps. The participants praised the sterling quality of his character, especially his selfless fight against terrorist groups.
He was keen for his fight against this terrorism, and he need to be remembered. We must remember General Qasem Soleimani for his bravery and standing against injustice. He fight against the extrajudicial killing of innocent people by the so-called ISIS and other terrorist organizations.
General Soleimani and his fellow Iraqi commander Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis were assassinated in a targeted drone attack on the 3rd of January 2020 in the Iraqi capital, Baghdad, with orders from then-US President Donald Trump. People here say the assassination of General Soleimani has revealed the true identity of terror sponsors to the world.
Those that claim to be fighting against terrorism kill a hero, somebody who fights against terrorism. Now, who are the terrorists? America is the perpetrators of terrorism in the world. It is very clear to the whole world that these are the global sponsors and perpetrators of terrorism in the world.
Military hospital.
In a message to the occasion, Nigeria's senior Muslim cleric Sheikh Ibrahim Al-Zazaki said the Islamic movement in Nigeria will continue to mark the assassination of General Soleimani, just like it marks other martyrs in Karbala, Zaria, and other places. Nigerians who gathered here say they share the pain of the Iranian people and indeed of all law-abiding nations of the world who stand against extrajudicial killing like that of General Qasem Soleimani by the U.S. government. Tanjum Abdullahi, Abuja.
After almost 140 days of his hunger strike, the 40-year-old Palestinian prisoner Hisham Abu Hawash is in imminent danger, facing the risk of sudden death at any moment. Representatives of Palestinian factions and prisoners' advocacy groups in the occupied Ramallah took to the streets again, sounding the alarm over the health condition of Abu Hawash, who is protesting his illegal administrative detention without charge or trial.
My brother Hisham could die at any moment. This is according to medical reports by the doctors who have directly examined Hisham. We are really worried about his health. Israel is using a new form of assassination against our brothers.
The International Committee of the Red Cross has meanwhile issued a statement demanding Israel to immediately release Abu Hawash. Israel claims it keeps some Palestinians behind bars without disclosing sensitive information that could expose valuable sources. In the case of Abu Hawash, Israeli intelligence claims he's an activist of the jihad movement. However, it was not able to provide explicit evidence in support of its allegations. Palestinian human rights organizations say it's yet another attempt to bring Palestinian prisoners to their knees and prevent them from being engaged in any form of struggle.
My brother Hisham could die at any moment. This is according to medical reports by the doctors who have directly examined him. We are really worried about his health. Israel is using a new form of assassination against our brothers.
Last month, the Israeli regime accepted to release hunger-striking prisoner Kaid al-Fasfus after 131 days of his protest, where his release was seen as yet another form of victory. As Israel reportedly holds over 4,500 Palestinian prisoners, hundreds of them are languishing behind bars without charge or trial under the illegal so-called administrative detention. Palestinians pray that Abu Hawash's life could be saved before it's too late. Abu Hawash, who's literally on the verge of death, has said before his health severely deteriorated that he will continue his hunger strike until victory. That is, according to him, his release or his martyrdom. Mona Kandil, occupied Ramallah.
Inside the former U.S. Embassy in Tehran, Iranian judicial experts gathered to reveal the details of a probe into the U.S. assassination of Iranian top military commander, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani. General Soleimani was the commander of the Quds Force of the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps, which is in charge of conducting overseas operations. He was assassinated in January 2020 in a U.S. drone strike outside Baghdad International Airport on a direct order from then-U.S. President Donald Trump.
The U.S. justifies its crime by branding it as self-defense or targeted killing. There is no such legal term in the international law. It is an assassination and cannot be justified by fake terms. It's an extrajudicial murder which violates the UN resolutions 1368 and 1370. Furthermore, based on the Chicago Convention, the use of UAVs in another sovereign country requires the permission of that country. Iraq says it did not give such a permission to the U.S. to carry out this strike.
Iran and Iraq have formed a joint investigation committee comprised of Iraqi and Iranian judicial experts. Based on the latest findings of the legal team, more than 120 people have been identified in connection with General Soleimani's assassination. Former U.S. President Donald Trump tops the list.
General Soleimani was on a mission to Iraq, a mission that concerns the fight against terrorism. The Convention on Special Missions protects the rights of General Soleimani, but Washington breached that convention as well. So all these violations of international law are considered a crime, and we are taking the case to international judicial bodies to penalize the perpetrators.
General Soleimani holds a reputation for eliminating Daesh terrorists in Iraq in 2017. He also led major operations in Syria that led to the recapturing of key areas from the terror group. That's why his assassination is viewed as a huge loss for the region and a big win for the terrorists, something which experts say leads to a safe interpretation that Washington must be on the terrorists' team.
2 years have passed since General Soleimani was assassinated, and Iran is still as resolute to prosecute those behind the incident. Iran's judiciary calls the culprits the terrorists' comrades, saying it will not stop until all perpetrators are brought to justice. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
In a press conference in the capital Sana'a, Yemen's Eye for Humanity Center for Rights and Development released its new report on the Saudi crimes committed against Yemenis during 2021. The report highlights the number of victims of the Saudi air attacks and the destruction of the country's infrastructure.
Recently, the Saudi-led coalition has escalated its raids against civilian facilities and residential areas crowded with civilians in Yemen, and tried to justify this by saying that there were military activities in those areas, which was not true. We monitor all the crimes of the Saudi-led coalition and the victims who fall in Saudi airstrikes and mortar shelling.
The report says Saudi warplanes have launched over 9,900 airstrikes against civilian facilities across Yemen last year, killing 387 civilians, including 96 children, and injuring hundreds more. In a previous report, the human rights group said more than 43,000 civilians had been hurt or killed in relentless airstrikes across Yemen since Saudi Arabia launched a war on its southern neighbor in 2015. It said nearly 4,000 children were among those killed.
As people around the world celebrate the New Year with festivals and joyful events, Yemenis enter a new year of war and siege imposed on their country by Saudi Arabia. People here believe that the years-long resistance will eventually bring Riyadh to justice for its crimes in Yemen. Abdulatif Washali, Sana'a.
France has assumed the rotating presidency of the Council of the European Union for the next 6 months, with Emmanuel Macron promising to make the world's largest common market into a more influential and independent bloc. Yet the European Union begins 2022 beset by major difficulties: the open wound of Brexit, marginalization in global geopolitics, an uncertain post-corona economic future coming on the heels of a lost decade of economic growth, and deep divisions on the issues of immigration, right-wing economics, and relations with Moscow. The European Union appears to be at a crossroads. With Angela Merkel finally stepping down, there is no clear leader or figurehead. Emmanuel Macron wants to assume her mantle, but many say that his liberal strongman approach to the yellow vests has reinforced perceptions that the EU is not just non-democratic, but anti-democratic. Historically, no country's elite has been more pro-Europe than in France, and no French leader has been more pro-EU than Macron. However, analysts remind that Macron only has the power to push the EU's agenda in a certain direction and not to decide policy unilaterally, as he has often done in France.
It's a bit egotistical and ethnocentric to think that France will be able to accomplish anything more than Slovenia, Sweden, or any of the other previous heads of the European Union. So, in the matter of a common defense policy, of a green energy transition, of economic regulation, of ending economic stagnation, Macron won't be able to accomplish in 6 months anything which Brussels hasn't been able to achieve in the past 10 years.
With a tightly contested presidential election looming in April, it seems certain that Macron's continental-sized ambitions will be constrained by domestic politics.
C'est plus un obstacle.
I think Macron will find the rotating presidency to actually be an obstacle to his re-election ambitions. Representing the interests of 70 million Frenchmen and also 450 million citizens of the European Union, and also being a candidate running for re-election, are three very different hats to wear. He will find himself in many conflicting positions.
The philosophy of Angela Merkel was marked by avoiding tough solutions to social questions while also demanding right-wing economic changes. As the EU emerges into a very different post-corona world, Europe may be demanding different solutions and possibly even different leaders before France's rotating presidency is over. Rami Mazahiri, Paris.
...2021 has come to an end, but the battle for peace and justice still continues here. In the Indian-administered Kashmir, people are hopeless more than ever as things have slipped from bad to worse. The Indian government said Kashmir will return to normalcy when it abrogated its special status in August 2019. But after that, the region has seen an outburst of violence. Media reports say that...